Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
Shavua Tov, and welcome back to Interesting Questions. We are going to finish up the fifth perek of Pirkei Avot tonight, today, wherever you may be. And so we're on the fifth perek, Mishnayot Chaf Hei and Chaf Vav. Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, Ben Chamesh Shanim LeMikra, 5 years old for learning Torah, Ben Eser Shanim LeMishnah, 10 years old for Mishnah, Ben Shalosh Esrei LeMitzvot, 13 years old, one becomes commanded in the mitzvot, Ben Chamesh Esrei LeGemara, 15 years old for Gemara, Ben Shmona Esrei LeChuppah, 18 years old for getting married, Ben Esrim LeRdof, 20 years old to pursue a livelihood, Ben Shloshim LeKoach, 30 years old, one attains full strength, Ben Arba'im LeBina, and at 40 years old, one attains understanding, Ben Chamishim LeEtzah, and 50 years at 50 years old, they can give counsel. Ben Shishim LeZikna, at 60 years old, they attain seniority. Ben Shivim LeSeva, at 70 years old, one attains a ripe old age. Ben Shmonim LeGvura, at 80 years old, one exhibits strength. Ben Tishim LaShuach, and at 90, one stoops over. Ben Me'ah Ki Ilu Meit, and at 100 years old, it is as if one has died. V'avar uvatel min ha'olam, and passed on and become irrelevant to the world. Ben Bagbag Omer, Ben Bagbag says, Hafachba vahafachba de kolaba. Delve into it, turn it over and turn it over, because all is in it. He's talking about the Torah. Uva techaze visiv uvleva, that everything is in it if you look deeply. Visiv uvleva, and grow and wear into it. Umina la tazua, and do not budge from it. She'ein lecha midah tova himena, because there is no better portion than it, meaning than the Torah. Ben hei hei omer, ben hei hei would say, lefum tzara agra, according to the exertion is the reward. So there's a lot for us to dive into here, Akiva. So the first thing I think we should look at is this idea of at what age people should start diving into certain types of Torah learning and an area where our professional Venn diagram overlaps, I think, is development. The development of children and developmental stages. So with your permission, I'm going to start off by talking about the children, and then we'll hand it off to you when they're about 18 years old. So I'm going to start off with infancy, right, which is where children, we call them students where I work, but where children basically go from zero, from knowing nothing, both in terms of age and their knowledge, to learning a tremendous amount in a very short period of time. And that includes everything from, sort of being able to see things, to being able to connect to who are familiar and unfamiliar family members in their immediate vicinity, to the beginnings of speech, and even the beginning of movement. So that's going to go up until about 14 months. And then you begin to have toddlers. And toddlers are going to go until about 2 years old. And during that time, you, generally speaking, we'll see even greater movement, both in terms of physical movement, but also in terms of speech. They will also be able to start to think a little bit critically in terms of understanding what is real and what is not. When you get to the third stage, which is 3 to 4 years old, they begin to recognize that there are other people in the world, other people have feelings, other people have needs. From 4 to 11 years old, right, they are exploring themselves in the sense that they want to find out what it is they like, what they don't like, building their own confidence. There's a lot going on in terms of trying to understand the world around them. And then we get to adolescence, which is 12 to 18. And there you have really a goal in terms of establishing independence, in terms of a certain amount of pushback that will happen because they want that independence. There is a desire, in some cases, both to understand the world and to revert back to a simpler time because they suddenly understand how complicated things might really be. And so with that, I will hand it off to Akiva, and you can speak more about what happens after they turn 18, and then we'll talk about how this Mishnah might relate to those developmental stages or not.
Wonderful, Avi. Well said. So really, it's interesting that we kind of start to think of adults at the age of 18, at least in the U.S., and at the same time, we know from science that, or from studies rather, that brain development, really final maturation, is in anywhere from the early mid-20s if you're female, and mid to even sometimes late 20s if you're male. And what are the final things to mature? A lot of the final connections involve executive functioning, so decision-making, planning, figuring out how to basically do those nuanced things where we say, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea, or hey, how about I have a plan before I dive headfirst into this pool. And what's interesting is right, as a side note, I will point out, if we take note, when is often compulsory military service? Between 18 and, well, at least in the U.S., they don't have interest in you after the age of 26 for compulsory military service, sign up for the draft. And even in other countries, right? So in Israel, they take you when you're 18 and they keep you for 3 years. So why is that? Well, good following orders at that point, and young men tend to be filled with testosterone at that point, which is when we all know that we make the best decisions. Suffice it to say, once our brains are fully online, we tend to be more in that realm of either we figured out if we've made it or we haven't. And really, that's not the technical term, obviously, but that's where we kind of get to the point of, all right, do I have mastery yet, or do I have still this, am I not where I need to be? Am I not going in the right direction? And again, that moves along further and further in that either you have that realization of mastery, which leads to more sustainable health and ego health, or various collapses. And as we continue to age, right, and here we've gone as high as 100, and that's when we've started to also learn more about the fact that our brains, just like any other computing system, is not made to last forever. And unfortunately, what we see is that many cognitive issues do tend to become more and more prevalent as we get older and older. So, septuagenarian, most of them are plugging along just fine. By the time you're in your 90s, well, the reality is that many are not necessarily fully cognitively with it, And that's not to say that everybody, I'm not suggesting anybody look at their, you know, 90-something-year-old grandparent and say, hey, guess what I learned today? I'm not suggesting that. But what we also know, by the way, is that genetics plays a large role in those individuals, especially when we get into the 90s plus. So if you had a grandparent who happened to, or happens to be, in their 90s or 100s, the likelihood is you got some good genes. And it's not uncommon to see certain families where everybody lives past well into their 90s, well into their 100s. And when I say everybody, of course, we're dealing, certainly now, there would still be people who all sorts of other things could have gotten in the way of that long life. But if you have a family history where nobody's making it to 110, modern medical science, and I say this tongue-in-cheek because that's ever-changing, dictates that the likelihood is you may not be the record breaker when it comes to adding 20 more years. On that positive note, Avi, why don't you talk to us a little bit about more about this, the ideas of when we start incorporating different Judaic studies, because one of the things that I'm baffled by, actually, is it begins with five. It doesn't begin where many of us have been starting our children, where, right, we say three. Three is the pre-et. So you can touch the fruit, you can take the fruit, you can start learning. The sponge starts to take on mitzvot, and it's very interesting that this leaves that part off, and I imagine maybe it's purposeful, but maybe it's not. Maybe you can talk to us a little bit about that process.
So I think first and foremost, we can look at the fact that this particular Mishnah deals with textual learning. And so the idea that you can teach a three-year-old things is absolutely true. But most of what you're going to teach them is either behavioral or by rote. So the idea, right, many of us will say Shema each night with our children before they go to sleep, right? We do that to impart certain behavioral norms, the idea of thinking about Hashem before we go to sleep, the idea of saying Shema, and hopefully to provide our children with the rote ability to hear and say Shema. But if you actually want children to be able to read a piece of text and begin to try to understand it, well, there's a reason that we teach reading when children are about 5 years old. And we do this both in English and in Hebrew. And that is the average age when children can actually begin to read. And by reading, I'm talking about decoding and the ability to understand plain text. So it doesn't surprise me that if we're talking about learning Torah, right, we're not talking about living a Jewish life. That is something that can happen from day one. But the idea of mikra, of learning the text of the Torah, happens at 5 years old when they can read the text. And similarly, we say at 10 years old is when they can begin to learn Mishnah. So Mishnah is, again, one of those texts that is a little bit more challenging. It requires a certain amount of critical thinking. It's not simply, you know, read and understand, but or read and explain, but you'll have to read and understand. Mishnah was written in a shorthand, and so the ability to parse that shorthand might begin at 10. And I think that to a large extent, we still follow both of these dictums. In the sense that when do we really start, you know, if we go back to when a lot of schools have their Chumash parties, it will be in kindergarten or first grade. When do the kids start learning Mishnah? Usually around the time that the kids are 10 years old, 9, 10 years old, so fourth or fifth grade. The interesting thing to me is we seem to push forward the next one, which is Gemara at 15. Usually most schools these days do one, maximum 2 years of Mishnah, and then they jump right into Gemara. So there are kids who are jumping into Gemara at 11 or 12 years old. And what's interesting to me about that is that what we should expect at that point is not that they understand the Gemara, but that they are building vocabulary and that they are understanding how to read the text. But they are not going to understand the logic of the Gemara. Because to understand the logic of the Gemara, it is necessary for students to be able to think abstractly. And in order to do that, a little bit like they might, along with algebra or algebra and proofs, they need to be able to understand abstract concepts that go beyond the concrete. And that, we see, usually happens developmentally right around the age of 15. That is when students and children can understand abstract ideas that go beyond something they can feel or touch. And then when we get to 18 years old for chuppah, for getting married, I find it very interesting, Akiva, that they suggest you get married at 18 and then pursue a livelihood at 20. I'm not sure what's happening during those 2 years. I don't know if, I mean, I suppose it's possible that the in-laws and the parents are supporting them for those 2 years. That happens in some communities today. But it certainly seems that the idea of having a job is an important piece.
Avi, I just want to cut in for a minute there. Wasn't this also drafted at a time when Rebbeim and Chachamim also had trades?
That is also true. It's interesting that this particular Mishnah seems to be written later, since it talks about a Gemara, right? So the Mishnah knew about the Gemara in order to say there, this is when you would learn Gemara. But it would have been the norm for rabbis to also have other professions all the way back to Hillel and Shammai. We know that Hillel was a water carrier and delivered water to people's homes, and Shammai was a builder. At one point it says he hit somebody with a, it's usually translated as a ruler, but it's probably more correct to say it was a builder's
square. So I wonder if, and I'm just speculating because I wasn't there, but right, we know that a lot of times children begin learning their father's trade when they're really toddlers, when they're three. So I'm wondering if perhaps the suggestion is that between 18 and 20 is when you begin to transition from earning within your father's household to earning within your household. Again, just speculating, but noting that people were probably working in other professional trades beyond just sitting in kollel, that would probably be the way that it would happen.
Right, and even if it wasn't your father, you might have had an apprenticeship with someone else, and then at 20 you were prepared to go out on your own and start this business for yourself. Having been 30, I can say, yeah, there's a certain amount of strength there. Having been 40, I can say there is a certain amount of understanding and bina and havana that happens in your 40s. A shout out to my good friend Jimmy Fendelman, who told me early on that when he past the age of 50, he stopped caring what other people were thinking, and that was something I've looked forward to and believe it to be true. Just wish it had happened a little bit earlier. Maybe I'll say you care less about what other people think. And God willing, I'll see what 60s and 70s, 80s, 90s, and even God willing, 100 look like.
I mean, you know what's interesting though? One of the things that gets left off, or maybe it's not left off, where's the learning after 15? Now, one could presume, okay, well, we just continue with Gemara in perpetuity, but Is that reason? I know there's plenty of people who go and begin learning more and more text. There are also more, right, mystical studies that happen for some after a certain amount of the, I hate to say basic, but, you know, fundamental and rudimentary concepts, or I guess probably beyond that too. But where's the...
Well, there are two possibilities. One is there was no text after the Gemara that this Mishnah knew about, and therefore it didn't say, and learn whatever comes after Mishnah, because it didn't know what it would be. Or, alternatively, at a certain point, right, you've stopped being introduced to new text, and now you make decisions about what it is you want to study. And that might be why Ben Bagbag says, right, this is sort of our transition to the next Mishnah, Mishnah 26, that Ben Bagbag says, hafachba v'hafachba, delve into it, turn it over and over again, right? You can continually go back to it, to Kulaba, because everything is in it, right? You and I spent year one of this podcast going through each Parsha and learning something about each Parsha. We could do that again, and I think come up with a whole new set of things to talk about in regard to each Parsha, both because we are now sitting at a different place in our lives and therefore look at it with different glasses or with different vision, and because there is so much in the Torah and the way that the world is spinning makes us look at it a little bit differently in each time we go through it. And so there's always more to learn. There's always the depths of Torah that can be plumbed, but you have to be interested and willing to do so. And I think that goes well with the statement of Ben Hehe, who says, in proportion to the exertion is the reward, right? Too often people go, I didn't get it. I didn't want it. You know, it was too hard. Yeah, anything worth doing is really hard, right? People who have started new businesses, it's hard. People when you have children, it's hard. Even making marriage work is hard, but it's worthwhile. And the things that come easy to us, I think, are those things that we often find that are not worthwhile. Insights on that, Akiva?
Avi, I think you said that pretty well as it is. I agree with you. I think that anything, and certainly Torah is the rule and not the exception in any way, there's always something more to learn. There's always something to remaster, to master in a different way, right? I'm sure that the artisan who makes it the same way each and every time makes something singularly great that same way each and every time. But the only way that artisan creates something new is by trying a different way. And the same is true when we're learning Torah. The more you read, the more you learn, the more you have experience in life in X, Y, or Z situation, the better you are able to handle this. In the field of psychiatry and other medicine, right? We try and find someone who has, as they say, just enough gray hairs. Just enough where we know they've had enough experience. And the other piece is not too many gray hairs, which fits into what I was talking about later on. Or earlier on, rather. But I have another question for you, Avi, because this kind of led me to start thinking about the fact that at no point in time in this Mishnah does it say at what age one should start beginning to write and provide their written opinions or commentaries. I mean, it says, okay, by at 50 you can provide counsel, but that's not the same thing as providing commentary, I believe. And it then further got me thinking about some of our greatest commentators and what ages they might have been. And while I agree that this should not necessarily be give you information on when the outliers began doing things, but at the same time, you know, it does beg the question, how old was Rashi? How old was Rambam and Ramban and so many others who didn't live necessarily very long lives, but certainly provided a wealth of information, generally, I think, from a relatively earlier age. And I think that one of the challenges is this sets the stage to say, well, if you're not 50 yet, maybe you don't have anything to share. And I know that that's not necessarily what it's saying, but at the first glance, you can't help but think that, which obviously gets back into our Mishnah Chaf Vav, which says, don't give something just the first glance.
So I think this takes us to our question for around the Shabbos table this week. Because as you said, when do we start to give back? When do we have these questions about providing? And also, looking at our Mishnah, right, it says, in proportion to the exertion is the reward. And so, what is it that you might want to accomplish? And when is a time when you have had to put in significant exertion in order to reap a reward? And can you share that with your family so that they understand that sometimes what might look like, oh, it just happened, is something that happened after many years of toil, is something that didn't come easily, but was rather something that took a lot of work, and finally at the end, the reward becomes visible.